After months of diplomatic tension, relations between Australia and China are finally starting to thaw. This week, Foreign Minister Maurice Payne and Trade Minister Simon Birmingham will visit China for economic and strategic talks, the first high-level official meeting since 2016. Beijing was angered by the passage of foreign interference laws earlier this year and what it considered to be anti-Chinese rhetoric during the debate. Professor Rory Medcalf is the head of the National Security College at the ANU. Welcome back to RN Drive.
My pleasure.
How significant is it that after 18 months of refusing to engage, China has invited Maurice Payne and Simon Birmingham to visit?
Oh, look, I think it's a very positive step in the bilateral relationship, but in some ways, it's also a vindication of the firm stance that Australian governments, particularly the Turnbull government, have taken in recent years. Because when you think about it, Australian policy towards China hasn't changed one bit in the past 6 months, even if the choice of words in expressing that policy has changed a little.
Many of the underlying tensions between Australia and China are over foreign investment, the South China Sea. They're still there. So why are we seeing the improvement now?
Absolutely. The fundamental dynamics are still there. Strategic tensions, foreign influence, and so forth. I think context is really important, and there are two things that matter. One is with the Trump administration's really economic pushback against China, not only a trade war, but really quite a fully fledged strategic and economic competition. China has probably quite sensibly realised it shouldn't be antagonising many countries at once. And so it wants to, I guess, encourage Australia and probably some other countries as well to begin to see its point of view and not to, antagonise us any further. The second point of context is that the departure of Malcolm Turnbull and Julie Bishop gave China a kind of excuse to change the subject, almost to quietly blink after the, I guess, the staring competition that the relationship had become. And so, in a sense, China has now expressed the view that it welcomes constructive relations with Australia, mutual respect and so forth, but it hasn't made a fuss about the fact that Australia is just as resistant to Chinese influence, indeed perhaps even more so on 5G and in the South Pacific than it was a year or two ago. So it's quite fascinating.
The Chinese government has been critical of former Foreign Minister Julie Bishop and some of her comments around the South China Sea. Does being new to the role provide a reset for the new Prime Minister and also the new Foreign Minister Maurice Payne and an opening to establish a better relationship?
Look, it provides some kind of face-saving diplomatic cover for China and indeed for both sides, but nothing has changed below the surface. You've got to remember that both Scott Morrison and Maurice Payne have been members of the National Security Committee of Cabinet for some years. They owned all of the decisions and all of the policy positions that China was uncomfortable with. It's just that they're choosing their words carefully at the moment in how they express it. So I think all in all, this is actually a vindication for the rather firm and independent foreign policy Australia has demonstrated in recent years.
The Victorian government has signed a memorandum of understanding with China to be part of its Belt and Road infrastructure program. Does that undermine Australia's foreign policy, as the Prime Minister suggests?
I think it is unhelpful, and I also think it's a little short-sighted of the Victorian government, both from the perspective of the state's interests and from the perspective of the Labor opposition federally, because in many ways the high point of Belt and Road further was perhaps a year or two ago. Already many countries are beginning to have second thoughts about their engagement with a China-centric global infrastructure vision, and instead they're being much more, I guess, fastidious and selective in the projects they engage with. So I think for the Victorian government to offer a kind of diplomatic blank check to China at the moment in the way that New Zealand did 18 months ago is just bad timing, and it's a real shame that there wasn't genuine consultation with the Commonwealth or indeed with the Parliamentary Labor Party at a federal level before that decision was taken.
States are generally not experts in international diplomacy, and the Andrews government is refusing to publicly release the details of the agreement. Is that concerning? Should they publicly release it?
Look, I think that it's quite odd and perplexing that there isn't transparency around this, and simply to say that China doesn't want transparency on this issue is hardly going to bring comfort really to any serious player in Australia. I mean, there are issues like labour rights, environmental standards, good governance, debt management, and of course the big question of strategic influence that any agreement on the Belt and Road or on the major Chinese infrastructure projects in Australia should have taken into account. And it really is quite extraordinary that an Australian government of any political complexion is not more open on those issues.
If you're just tuning in, this is RN Drive and my guest is Professor Rory Medcalf. He's the head of the National Security College at the ANU. Let's move to another big breaking story this afternoon. And it seems that the US has now appointed an ambassador to Australia. We've been waiting for a long time, in fact. His name is Arthur B. Culverhouse Jr. What do we know about him?
Look, it's on balance a good development for Australia. I mean, frankly, it's a relief that finally we have, I guess, an official nominee for ambassador, even though we've had an excellent chargé, an acting ambassador in Jim Caruso for the last couple of years. What we know about Arthur Culverhouse Jr., and of course, he's around 70 years old, so he's perhaps not that junior, is that he is a very experienced and respected senior lawyer in the Washington scene. He served the Reagan administration. He played a key role in vetting vice presidential candidates for the Republican Party a number of times in recent years, perhaps a mixed record, Sarah Palin as well as Mike Pence. But on balance, he looks like a serious, steady player, and importantly, he's someone who knows how to play the game of attention, influence, and access in Washington. He's certainly not a dilettante.
And the post has been vacant, as I alluded to, for 2 years. Why has it taken so long?
Well, I think we can assume that that relates to the general dysfunction of the Trump administration. Perhaps a degree of complacency and assumption that Australia doesn't make a fuss and isn't therefore worthy of that level of focus and attention, but also because the ambassador we were to have, Harry Harris, was at the last minute, I guess, diverted to Seoul to deal with Korean Peninsula issues, North Korea tensions and so forth, a clearly higher priority or a more immediate priority for the Trump administration. But look, on balance, I think it's good that we're going to have a serious ambassador, and he looks like a credible and pragmatic player, not necessarily an ideologue. So perhaps there may be a silver lining to this.
Rory, thank you for your insights.
My pleasure.
Professor Rory Medcalf is the head of the National Security College at the ANU.